thanks to the parched throats of a new generation of hops lovers. Beer, microbreweries, and tap houses are seeing a renaissance of sorts in America, and that certainly holds true here in Syracuse.
Did somebody say beer?
Yeah, somebody said beer, Kevin. Somebody said beer.
Now, I didn't know this till recently, so it's funny you bring it up, but Syracuse actually has a rich history of brewing.
It does, and we're going to explore it on this episode of the 315.
As a public radio listener, we know you have a lot of different interests. And with our slate of podcasts, we try and provide on-demand audio for everyone.
This is Marv Duger with Science on the Radio.
From contentious public divorces to drunk driving arrests to private rants caught on tape, Hollywood figures are no stranger to the heat of the spotlight.
The NBA Draft Combine starts today, and every Syracuse fan is watching this guy.
Whether it's science, sports, or pop culture, we think you'll find something you can enjoy. Check out our selection of on-demand audio over at WAER.org or in Apple Podcasts by searching for WAER.
Welcome to the 315. I'm Joe Lee.
And I'm Kevin Claus. Beer has been made in the Syracuse area as early as the 1790s. And one beer in particular is set to make a comeback.
And here to help us explore the glorious history of Syracuse brewing is Bob Searing. He's curator of history at the Onondaga Historical Association. Welcome, Bob.
Thanks for having me, fellas.
Now, you recently did a presentation on the history of brewing in Syracuse. How'd that go?
It went well. It was very well attended. We had about 40 people at our downtown museum on Montgomery Street. It's a story that a lot of people don't necessarily know, but Syracuse, like a lot of cities its size, had a strong brewing presence, especially in the 19th century. Unfortunately, Prohibition killed American brewing off, generally speaking. So Syracuse is really indicative of other cities across the country.
And give us a sense of where some of these breweries were located and who were they serving and how were they distributing?
So a lot of them were in the ethnic neighborhood. So, for instance, Haberle Brewing Company that was responsible for Congress that became Haberle Congress Brewing Company was up on the north side where a lot of German immigrants had settled. So up on the corner of McBride and Butternut Street is actually where that brewery complex was, and it was a massive complex. So the Germans brought their brewing tradition, they brought their recipes with them, and they brought the lagering process with them after the 1840s when it was invented. So they was up there. In fact, Germania Brewing Company, which became Bartles Brewing Company, was actually located right where the Niagara Mohawk building is on Erie Boulevard, right on the Erie Canal. So that was sort of part of the talk that I gave, the way the canal was made Syracuse sort of a center for not only beer production, but malt houses and things like that.
Now, you talked right there just about the rich history that we had in the past. But it's making a comeback. What has led to the comeback?
The comeback, I think, has been sort of a culmination of a couple of years of work on behalf of the OHA, particularly Greg Tripoli, our executive director, has sort of had a fascination with bringing these brands back from the past. And as you guys know from being in the city, there's a lot of breweries springing up, which, again, is all over the country. You know, we're wondering if we're getting to peak brewing. But here in Syracuse, there's a lot of really good beer being made. When I came on board about a year ago, it was one of the things that really drew me to this particular position with OHA was the idea of bringing this thing back from the past. So we worked hard, tasted a lot of beer, and ended up deciding to partner up with Willow Rock to make Congress, to bring back sort of a pre-prohibition style lager and bring back a little bit of history to the present and sort of wed nonprofits with private enterprise.
In doing your research for your presentation, were there some surprising facts about brewing in Syracuse that you didn't know or that surprised your audience?
I just think the number of breweries. I mean, we had some really large brewing capacity here. And during peak production for beer in Syracuse, we were doing about 350,000 barrels annually.
Wow.
As a city. And again, Syracuse was never a really large city. I mean, it's biggest. About this time, we got a population of about 250,000 in the 1890s. So that's a lot of beer, 350,000 barrels for 250,000 residents. That speaks to a bit. And I was really actually surprised to find out the size of a man named John Greenway, who was probably the first real brewer of note, built a massive complex over, again, on the Erie Canal near where the Niagara Mohawk building is, one of the largest malt houses in the country, the largest one certainly in upstate New York. And he was selling malt to distillers, brewers. And so he actually built quite a fortune. And that company survived for a very long time. So a really like a substantial market, a substantial productive capacity. I was a little surprised to see that for a city like Syracuse.
Is there a sense of how many employees or people were in the industry?
Yeah, at peak time, what we figure is somewhere between 400 and 500 people were working in a brewing industry between the large brewers. So whether it was Haberle, whether it was National, Moore and Quinn, Bartles, those were really the big ones in the 1890s and early 1900s. But like I said, before Prohibition came and ruined the party.
So for someone who enjoys beer but couldn't talk to you about why I enjoy it more than this tastes good and this doesn't taste good, through your research, have you sort of gained an understanding on some of the science that goes into what makes for a real good beer?
Yeah, I mean, so much of it is subjective as to, you know, what a real good beer is. But working closely with Kevin and Rockney at Willow Rock, sort of getting to do hop samples, you know, making tea out of various hops to get the florals, to get the scents, to figure out, you know, what kind of taste profiles you're going to get. And then this Congress iteration went through 3 or 4 test batches. And every time the fellas would tweak, you know, the malt, whatever malt they were using, whether they wanted to have a little more sugar, to add a little more alcohol content, to make it a little sweeter, to make it a little maltier. Different sort of hops are going to bring pinier notes. If you're a gin drinker, you know, my wife loves Bombay Sapphire. It's heavy on the pine. I don't care for that. I'm more of a citrus hop guy. I get a little more of that citrus grapefruit. For Congress, for what we're trying to bring back was to try to make sort of more of a traditional lager beer. So we're talking about more German-style hops, really crystal clear sort of beer, like you think almost like a classic yellow. You could see through it, and lower alcohol per volume.
And when you go in to make one of those tweaks like you just talked about, I know nothing about the brewing process. What's the time frame on making a tweak like that, like more sugar or changing the malt to any extent?
So to give you a sense, so the first test batch we tasted from Willow Rock was back in maybe March, and now we are in August. So, and that's been, this will be the fourth iteration. So it takes several weeks, and then with lagering, you know, lager is German for storage. So lager takes longer. It needs to be at colder temperature for longer to get that yeast clarified. So it takes a good, you know, between 4 and 6 weeks, I think, from getting it into the tank, getting it into the barrel, from it to where you can actually taste it on tap somewhere. But again, that varies. It can vary. That's the other thing. It's amazing how much variance there is in beer. And just one little tweak or one extra, you know, few minutes in the tank can change the complexity of the beer, the taste, the profile, the look. It's amazing.
So, why bring back Congress? Why was Congress the one to sort of relaunch?
I think a part of it was the fact that Haberle was the longest lasting brewery in Syracuse. It closes its doors in 1962. It survived through Prohibition. A few Syracuse breweries did, but Haberle was the only one to make it through. It was a really popular beer in the city. It was probably the most popular beer in the city. And one of the things that we were really drawn to was the branding of the beer. So they had actually used Congress. So we've got some old trays and things that we sell t-shirts and trays at our museum and around town. And they actually use the Capitol building, which you can't do anymore. You can't like put Congress on beer anymore. Even though Congress makes you want to drink, I think more than many do still. But so it was a popular beer. We actually were left to a certain degree some of the recipes by the brewmasters when the place closed down. So we had sort of an idea of what went into it. But again, they were making peak for Haberle in 1955. They were making 150,000 barrels a year. To give you a sense, we're going to roll out, the first rollout of Congress is going to be 60 barrels. So that's a significant decrease. So the ratios are different. The products they were using were drastically different. But we like the brand. We like the picture. We like the story. And we have still, OHA has a connection. We actually have Gambrinus, who is this Bavarian god of beer, if you will. And he's about a 15-foot statue. He's in our museum. And one of the Haberle descendants actually paid for him to be restored. Oh, so wow. we as an organization, OHA, have sort of been keeping the story of Syracuse brewing alive for a very long time. And there was the connection to the Haberle family, and we'd been, you know, selling the products for a while. The brands worked well. People really seemed to like it. So it just was a win-win. And again, it's a palatable beer to, you know, the masses, if you will.
And it's going to be available locally, or are you pushing it beyond the central New York region?
It's going to be available locally to start with. I know Willow Rock is going to have it at the Hotel Syracuse, or the Marriott downtown. We're going to get it into a couple local retailers. We've been working with Now and Later. We'll probably get it on tap at the 317, which is on Montgomery Street. Fish Fryer has worked with Willow Rock before, so it will be around. But the main venue initially will be at Shaughnessy's at the downtown Marriott, and that's where we're having the launch.
Jumping back to the history for a bit, we talked about Prohibition bringing an end to the brewing industry here. Is there a sense from your research what kind of impact it had on the local economy and jobs and people's lives?
I mean, locally, it was devastating to, you know, the small brewers and a lot of just the brewing capacity to begin with. So, I mean, if we're talking about 400 to 500 people employed by the time Prohibition is over in 1933, that number is cut down to probably less than 100 people working at the big breweries that were allowed to continue. Haberly Congress, for instance, survives making near beer, which was essentially like an O'Doul's or something that you'd find today. They could do that. They also were able to make some regular beer, which you could get through prescription during Prohibition. But no, it was it had a devastating effect, and it, as it did across the country, it drove drinking underground, and it, you know, raised public health concerns with people making things that they should have been making or trying to get around the Volstead Act to make products that should have been consumed by humans. But yeah, I mean, talking 300 people put out of work, and, you know, factories and businesses that had been open for generations closed down as a result of Prohibition.
And if this rollout of Congress went well, are there other historic beers that you guys have sort of thought, hey, maybe this could be something we could bring back as well?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly are open to the possibility. I know we've talked to the fellows at Willow Rock about it, you know, if this really goes well. And even just bringing back old styles. I mean, one of the things that I think I've been interested to sort of illuminate for people is this idea that, well, it's just hipsters and craft beer drinkers now drinking all these hoppy IPAs. It's like, well, no, they've been drinking India Pale Ale since, you know, the 1850s. So there's always been a wide variety of beer available. So in many respects, we've sort of come full circle, you know, if you will. I mean, this is will be 100 years since Prohibition, right? And so we're back to the point where we have all these craft breweries, local breweries. I mean, the idea of drinking beer that was produced locally was not really a thing to think about 100 years ago. You just did it. There was breweries all over town. You drank beer. You didn't drink beer from California if you lived in Syracuse, New York. So in many respects, we're sort of back to where we were. It's taken a century to get back there, but I think it's really good. And yeah, and we would love to. I mean, the shirt I'm wearing now, we're on the radio, but this is a Bock beer. A lot of breweries around here are making Bocks. I'm a big fan of Bock. Something to think about bringing back. I mean, so yeah, it's something we're thinking about, not just there, but sodas as well. We've got a lot of these historic recipes. And for us, it's cool to bring history alive and sort of keep telling the stories and, you know, so bring a literally taste something from the past. I think it's a really cool experience.
You talk like a beer fan and a beer drinker. Do you have some favorite spots, some haunts you like to hit in town?
I do. I mean, Willow Rock is one of my favorite breweries around. I'm really looking forward to the Tap Room opening up on Walton Street. I think that's going to be pretty sweet. Go to the Blue Tusk whenever possible. But yeah, those are my favorites. Well, we'll take the kids out to the Empire Farm, which is a really nice spot as well. But yeah, I love beer. Any chance my wife and I get to travel, we go brew pubs all over the country, try to get out and taste a sample. I think it's one of the cool ways to get to know a community and get to know the people. And like-minded people tend to congregate at those sorts of places. So I really enjoy it. But
now you guys are reintroducing Congress beer. There is an official event around that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
So we are having the Congress launch at the downtown Syracuse at the Marriott. It is Wednesday, August 15th at 4:00. We're going to have band. We're going to have food. Going to have Congress beer on tap. The fellas are bringing a whole lot of it. We're going to have games, parties. We're going to have Gambrinus. We're trying to get horses and carts, bring back sort of an old style beer parade they used to have through the ethnic neighborhoods of Syracuse. We're going to try to really roll it out in style and just have a party, hoping for good weather. So send good vibes for good weather.
Is that a ticketed event or people just show up?
It is free and open to the public.
Okay.
So come on by Syracuse. We'd love to see each and every one of you come out.
And no pun intended, but with that event on tap, can you sort of maybe give us a teaser of someone who's going to show up and get a sample of that Congress beer, taste-wise, maybe flavor profile, what can they expect?
They can expect a very crisp, clean beer. It is not overly hopped. It is really smooth. It's going to be a sort of a classic yellow beer would be the way I would think about it. If you poured it into a glass, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between that and another beer that you would buy a Coors Regular or a Labatt Blue or a Molson Canadian or something along those lines. I mean, the classic lagers, but with more flavor. It's handcrafted using as many local ingredients as the fellows at Willow Rock could do. This has been a labor of love for them, and I've had to unfortunately spend hours tasting beer, which has been a real tragedy for me. It's going to be something that's very refreshing. It's going to be great for the summer. I'm looking forward to getting a whole bunch of growlers and taking them up to our boat and just enjoying in the sunshine. So I think it'll be good for mainline drinkers, craft beer drinkers, and even like your friend who drinks Bud Light. They might enjoy it as well. In fact, I know they'll enjoy it.
You guys have, so you gave your presentation. Do you have pictures, photos, memorabilia that people can look at your website?
Yeah, there is. There's a large section of Brewiana on our website. And actually, in fact, I'm headed over to the hotel today to put up a little mini exhibit in Shaughnessy's that will stay up through August so that people can see some cool Brewiana, which people love. There's an enormous market out there and interest, but yeah.
And give that website address.
We are at cnyhistory.org.
Bob, thanks for coming in and talking to us. This is all very interesting stuff. I can't wait to come down and taste that Congress beer, too.
Thank you, fellas. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me in.
And that's going to do it for another edition of the 315. You can find past episodes of the podcast by going to waer.org or by visiting the 315 Facebook page.
And you can also connect with us on iTunes and Stitcher. Just search for the 315. Thanks for listening. I'm Kevin Claus.
And I'm Joe Lee. Until next time.